Welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is your host, Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show. And we are broadcasting live from Australia, the land down under, on BBS Radio. Great to have you with us today.
Yeah, great day. We're here today to talk about the ascension.
It's a great day to ascend. It's a great topic, too.
It really is.
It's a huge topic in spiritual circles at the moment.
For sure. We've got lots going on in the world, and we often talk about the paradigm shift on the show. So Lana and I were discussing this the other night. We were having a conversation about what the ascension means, and I actually wrote an article about this and sent it out on some article distribution sites. So we've come up with lots of ideas, and we thought we'd try to discuss them here today on the show. I think that the ascension means many things to many people. Generally, when we talk about the ascension, we're talking about it in relation to what we call the shift that's going on in the world, or the paradigm shift, or maybe even the pole shift to some people who are have been researching a thing called Planet X or Nibiru, which is another totally different subject, I think. Maybe not totally different, but nonetheless, the ascension, when people in the spiritual community talk about the ascension, they're generally talking about something like Judgment Day or the second coming of Christ, I believe, you know, biblical, apocalyptic, spiritual evolution. So I think from a mystic's point of view, I tend to call myself a mystic, which is just a title. Doesn't really mean much, but it's my spiritual beliefs in mysticism, my personal belief system. So for mystics, or at least for me personally, I tend to think of ascension in terms of personal growth and spiritual evolution and sort of the nature of reality. And in saying that, Lana and I have had a lot of discussions in the last week and in the last couple of years on this show about duality and non-duality and the illusion of duality. And for me, when I think of the ascension, I think of it as an ascension process, something that's ongoing, something that has to do with our spiritual evolution. So what do you have to say about that, Dr. Lana Love?
Well, I think it's, look, I must say, I think I agree with you. I love the idea that ascension is actually the stepping out of the matrix rather than necessarily stepping into another reality. What we do is actually we realize the reality of the here and now. It's all around us. Enlightenment is all around us. And the truth, if there is such a thing, the realization of non-duality is all around us. We just have to realize that. I don't know that in the ascension process we actually go into a different fifth dimension unless that dimension is a consciousness shift within us.
Right. I agree with you. I think a lot of people tend to think that, or what people in the spiritual community will say is that the ascension means that we're going from a 3D reality into a 4D or 5D reality shift, which means 3D being physical reality and you're transforming. I don't think it's quite like an out-of-body experience. I think it means that your consciousness is shifting. But generally, people who talk about the ascension are talking about the entire global population of humanity or the collective consciousness shifting all at once due to some kind of global event or something happening like World War III, I believe.
Mind you, that might happen as well. There might be different aspects of it. You have one or two or three or four people ascending. That might be very different to the whole population ascending.
Yeah, I mean, we really don't know.
Whether you actually lose your physical body when you realize non-duality, that's another thing. I just don't know about that. Buddha obviously was an ascended master. He died. I don't know whether he actually ascended or not. We do know that some spiritual masters can lose their bodies, and when they die, they call it a rainbow body. It's almost like they go into a higher vibrational state. We know of other spiritual masters that can come back. It can travel time and can come back into the body, in and out of the body. So there may be much more flexibility going from physical reality to non-physical reality. Who knows?
I mean, I've had classic out-of-body experiences, and I also experienced a spiritual death, is the best term I can use, which was almost like stepping through a portal, and it was almost like a dissociated state or a trance state where I was sitting in front of my computer and found myself somewhere else in another reality for a time period, which was very different from astral projection or a classic out-of-body experience. And we just had Easter, and we know the Christians say that Jesus actually came back after having been dead for 3 days and gone into the biblical hell, and he came back in his physical body, and he proved it to Thomas. He showed the wound from the spear, from the spear when he was on the cross, that he was still in his physical body and that he had come back to life. And then he actually ascended into heaven in his physical body. And Christians say that on Judgment Day, people will actually ascend into heaven on their in their physical bodies. That's the story, anyhow, in the Bible.
Look, it may well be that ascension has several different processes to it, but certainly the first process would be, I think, the realization that the life as we know it is an illusion, that our perception is stuck in duality. So the realization of non-duality, I think, is a fantastic way of escaping that. So let's talk a little bit about duality, non-duality, right, and how we can do that. Maybe you can tell our listeners a bit about your understanding of duality.
Yeah, David, I think that would be a great place to start, because I'm not sure that everyone knows what duality is. I imagine most spiritual people do. But duality has to do with how we use labels. It's how we describe the world or interpret our own personal reality. It's how we interpret our experiences or the events that occur outside of us. We use terms like fast and slow, small and large, beautiful and ugly, fast and slow, etc., as descriptive terms or words for our experiences.
And even more than that, it introduces the element of judgment.
Right.
And we then go into good and bad, light
and dark. That's
right, good
and evil. Mm-hmm. It's a way of comparing and contrasting people and situations and objects to our own references, our own past experiences, our preferences. Oftentimes we use duality for forming opinions about our experience, or about our present experiences.
It could be said that duality is a way of God learning about himself or herself. It's duality tends to create reactions, the need for decision making. Duality creates dramas in our life.
It does. It creates dramas and controversies because it's really an opinion. It's very subjective. When we say one person is beautiful and the other one is ugly, or one flower is beautiful and another plant is ugly, that's a very opinionated, biased view. And I guess you were talking about God learning through us as human beings, which
that's
is
right.
another concept, which is why we believe duality was instituted. It was a learning tool for human beings, because and at least for myself and for other spiritual people, we often believe that we are God, that God exists within us. Just like in the Bible, God made man in his own image. You could say that we have the God source within us, and so God experiences life as human. And so God, or the universe, or the universal intelligence, or the divine source, whatever term you give to the creator exists within us. We are part of the creator, part of the oneness of the universe. And so the universe is experiencing life in human form and uses duality as a learning tool to evolve or for personal growth. So that's what, and as I call myself a mystic, that's what I believe the meaning of life is, in a sense, part of the meaning of life.
Having said that, it seems rather paradoxical that the ultimate way of growing is to actually realize the duality is an illusion.
So this is what we call stepping out of the matrix, or breaking out of the matrix, is breaking out of this illusion of duality and understanding that there is non-duality, that we're actually doing this ourselves. This is last week we had Seven Bomar on our show, and he talked about the true matrix, or the organic matrix, being the reality that the creator formed for us, the natural world, organic life, plants, rock formations, the earth, the universe, the stars, etc. And the false matrix, or the dark matrix, as I like to call it, is our personal realities, which is duality, the illusion of duality. And we often form agreements around duality related opinions. When we say something's good, and a group of us will say something's good, or a group of people will say something's bad, and then that forms sort of a special consensus of reality, or a common reality for a group of people, that's sort of a false matrix. Those become our societal paradigms.
And of course, society is becoming more and more complex and more caught up with the do's and don'ts of life, the workforce, the banking cartels, the haves and the have-nots, and we get stuck in that. So I guess the first task that we have as people is to somehow get out of the matrix, the false matrix, the dark matrix that humanity has created.
Yeah, those are our societal agreements. We agree on these systems. We agree on our currencies. We agree on how things are valued and what success means, et cetera, and what's beautiful. Those are all societal agreements. And that's sort of falling apart. That's the breaking down of the matrix when people resist those societal paradigms, say we no longer accept these social conventions. We no longer want this, and we're protesting against it, and we're petitioning against it. We want something new. We want something different. We want free energy. We want self-sustainable living. We don't want to work to death anymore. We don't want to be slaves to the matrix system. And so stepping out of the matrix means understanding that we are doing this, we are creating these false matrices, and we're agreeing on it, and we need to reclaim our power and stop giving our power to the dark matrix. It means rediscovering our inner power and taking responsibility for our decision making. It means taking responsibility for our manifesting and everything we create in the world, rather than being victims and giving our power over to other people to make decisions for us and create our reality for us. We need to manifest our own reality.
That's our power. And that brings us to the topic of personal sovereignty, because taking control, being able to be in a neutral space where you can feel your own power and not the power of a false matrix, that creates a sense of personal control and sovereignty.
That's right. And that's our personal power. That's self-mastery. We have to be able to master ourselves before we can master anything we perceive outside of ourselves. And the way you master yourself and reclaim your personal power is by understanding that you are doing the manifesting. You are creating your own reality. You are the one using duality and creating the labels for yourself. So we need to know ourselves, be in touch with ourselves, and be in touch with our own feelings and thoughts. We need to know what our thoughts are. We need to know what our beliefs are. We need to know what we stand for. And then we can go about having greater control over the things that exist outside of us and have greater influence over creating the outer reality that we perceive.
So that's really deep.
It's
very exciting. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the next step, which is losing yourself altogether, non-attachment. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
And we are broadcasting from Australia on BBS Radio. So don't miss the next segment, Non-Attachment. See you soon.
Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is your host, Detective David Love.
And Dr. Lana Love. Welcome back to our show.
We're broadcasting live on the BBS Radio Network from the land down under. Welcome back to our show. We're here to talk about the Ascension.
Great topic. Very important topic.
It certainly is. We all want to ascend, don't we?
We do. Or do we?
Well, it's a personal decision, isn't it? So before we took our break, we decided that we were going to go into talking about non-attachment.
So we talked about personal sovereignty and developing a sense of mastery. Paradoxically, the next step after that, that is talked about by mystics and certainly in by Buddhist masters, is the step of non-attachment. So you master yourself and self-control, and then you learn to give up the self, because the next ultimate illusion is the illusion of self. We all think that we have a self that is constant from birth to death. We think of ourselves as constant. We think of other people having constant selves. Let me challenge that. The Buddha challenged that. Our emotions change from day to day. Our opinions can change from hour to hour. Our moods can change all the time. Our bodies go through changes. They say that our bodies replenish or completely change themselves every year or so, apart from the brain. We are constantly changing. So the idea that we are a constant entity is actually a very false idea. Very challenging for people to actually look at that and confront that. But what a sweet relief it is to know that we don't have to be imprisoned by a sense of self. How much agony, how much suffering does our sense of self actually bring us?
So are you talking about identity?
We're talking about identity, yes. We're talking about identifying ourselves as constant figures in our lives. We're talking about our attachment to ourselves in the way that we know it.
Is this all the hats we wear, like I am a private investigator and you're a doctor and you're a mother and I am a husband and I am a member of the community?
And it is, and we see this as a constant and we fight for ourselves.
Status.
Status and many other things. You know, we, if we start to lose our youth, we fight that. If we start to lose, you know, our work or our status as mothers or fathers when our children grow up, we become concerned, challenged and worried and then depressed or anxious about this. We cling to certain hats or roles that we have as
labels about ourselves, what we believe about ourselves. So this is
we seem to be very strongly invested in as well.
Attachment to self. It's almost like the search for self. It's almost like the who am I, until we get to the I am, the who I truly am, what I truly am, as opposed to what we believe we are.
Paradoxically, though, I do believe we need to find ourselves before we can truly discard ourselves. Having a strong sense of self, I think, is very important to achieve spiritual mastery. Having that strong foundation, the foundation that starts in childhood with being loved, having a consistent carer, gives a sense of loving ourselves and gives us a sense of personal consistency. And I do believe it's only after you achieve that that you can then throw that whole thing out.
So we're talking about a lot of people in the spiritual community talk about finding the true self or becoming your true self or your genuine self or your authentic self, which means this is what I stand for, this is what I believe, this is what I value.
And after that, we can actually throw that out as well because we can rise above that, because that's still duality.
Good point.
You realize the things you like and the things you don't like, the things you stand for and the things that you don't stand for. But of course, the true mystic stands in neutrality,
right,
in a zone of almost nothingness and everythingness.
A point of singularity or the zero point or the neutral space.
Which is, of course, a hologram of the whole universe. So if you are able to rise out of duality, then you actually can see all perspectives at once. It's truly a God's eye point of view. And that does mean letting go of the self. And it doesn't mean that your personality goes. It doesn't mean that you become a very boring, dried out guru meditating on top of a mountain.
Right.
You keep your sense of self and personality, but you develop another self, which is above self.
The greater self.
Yeah.
Possibly. You, I mean, I have a strong connection to my higher self, but you're talking about something even more than that. What they do in mysticism and maybe in other philosophies, we talk about the law of polarity. There are many universal laws or cosmic laws. The law of polarity is one of them. The law of polarity has to do with duality. It has to do with the extremes of duality, with things like fast and slow and big and tall and all these extremes, because the law of polarity is, it's almost not really a true law in a sense. It's because duality exists on an infinite spectrum. It's an unbroken spectrum of labels that we use to measure reality or subjectively measure the things we perceive in the world. So it's like there's no true. It's an infinite continuum, really. I mean, if you look at a thermometer or a barometer, how hot is hot? What's hot to you might not be hot to another person. What's cold to you might not be cold to another person. And how far do these extremes go?
I think you're hot, David.
So, we could look at it as a pendulum, and it goes in a matter of degrees, and fast and slow, or in anything, and beautiful or ugly, or anything that we, any of these labels that we come up with. So the mystic or the shaman or the spiritual teacher tries to rise above the swing of the pendulum of duality, the law of polarity, so that what you just said, Lana, is you're now stepping out of the matrix. You're now above the pendulum, looking down at everything from an observer's point of view, from an observer's perspective. So you've got Lana, you came up with this something called total perception or total perspective at one point, which means you're seeing the bigger picture. It's almost like you're stepping outside of yourself, like a spectator in a movie, and you're the actor in the movie, and you're actually watching yourself acting in the movie, so that you can actually make the story the way you want. You can write it the way you want, and you can have the outcome that you want, because you're no longer involved in the dramas or the controversies of that story or that movie. You're the outside observer looking at it, saying, this is how I want it to go. So you're no longer in that reaction mode. You're now able to give a response to what's happening.
Paradoxically, you realize that there's no ultimate meaning to things. And when you say there's no ultimate meaning, it means you wipe the slate clean, and you can create any meaning you wish.
That's right.
Total, absolute sovereignty.
I believe the meaning of life is that we are creating the meanings for ourselves in life, reality.
Mm.
I mean, I think everything does have its own meaning. Cats have their own meaning. Snakes have their own meanings. Rocks and plants have their own meanings. But we also give them meanings.
When I say there's no meaning, I mean no ultimate meaning, because there's so many different perspectives.
Because we are giving something that already has its own meaning. We're putting labels on cats and dogs and rocks and people and situations. Those are our meanings. So we're actually creating our own meaning of life, each one of us.
We all do. I guess the other thing to talk about is that this perspective of non-attachment to self is also a very important one to rise above suffering. In Buddhism, they teach us that it is attachment which causes suffering. You know, even attachment to people that we love, ultimately when they die, we suffer. When we see a beautiful sunset, it's so beautiful. It's actually very sad because it doesn't last. However, if you realize that nothing lasts, then you don't get as attached to it. Now, I do not mean not loving. In fact, non-attachment allows you to love even deeper. But it creates a perspective which is closer to a true bird's eye view, God's eye view perspective. Nothing lasts. Everything changes, including the self. And if you understand that, and if you accept it, and if you don't fight against that, but if you flow through the world with it, making the most of what you can, but not battling that which you cannot battle,
mm-hmm.
that creates a great sense of peace and love.
And that has a lot to do with what you were talking about before, Lana, with being in your neutral space or your zero point, where you're not attached to the things that are happening outside of you. So you're not, it's very difficult to get offended or insulted if you're actually truly in that space. And I think we should go to break and we'll come back and we'll talk about good versus evil and good and bad and positive and negative and how we deal with the situations in our personal lives and in the world of global issues in relation to what we've just talked about.
Great topic. Be sure not to miss that. So this is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
From Universal Soul Love on BBS Radio from the land down under. Don't miss the next topic. See you soon after the break.
Bye. We'll be back.
Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love.
I'm your host, Detective David Love, and my lovely co-host, Dr. Lana Love, broadcasting live on the BBS Radio Network from Australia. Welcome back to our show. We're talking about the Ascension today, and we're going to talk about we're going to be talking about good versus evil, light versus dark, activism, global issues,
and manifesting.
Manifesting your chosen reality, your desired reality.
Big topics, David.
And we've already gone through a lot of big topics already. I know we've been sort of jumping into a lot of big stuff. And we were talking about sacred, we were talking about neutral space or the zero point or what I like to call sacred neutrality.
So we talked about duality and good and bad earlier on in the show. But what we want to do now is look at those topics from a non-duality perspective. In other words, is it possible for what seems to be bad or evil or dark to actually be good and playing an important role, and vice versa?
Good point. And I know we've had guests who have talked about this before. A demon. I mean, let's just get right into this. Demons are evil. Horror movies. They're predators, astral predators. They come to possess your body and they come to disrupt your life, and they're the essence of evil, Satan, Lucifer, the whole dark forces.
Can't think of anything darker
scenario.
Than that.
Nope.
Are they really dark? Are we misjudging them? Do they play a role in life?
Do they play a role in the divine plan of the Creator?
Do they allow for heroes to exist? Do they allow for us to learn the difference between good and bad, and for us to really rise up above ourselves and really do things for others?
Yeah, because as human beings, like I said before, and Lana said, we talk about duality, particularly good versus bad or good versus evil or light versus dark, is almost the biggest comparison. It's often a preference. Early on in ancient times, we looked at snakes and the serpents, and they became Satan, basically, in Genesis with Adam and Eve. The snake was considered the devil. So are snakes evil? Are snakes Satan? Or are they just snakes? And are they just part of the natural world and part of the natural order? And are they just surviving on instinct and primordial, more primitive drives? And I'm not even saying that snakes are primitive, but they're just doing what snakes do. I don't think snakes see themselves as evil. I doubt serpents see themselves as evil. But we've got this perception of them being that way because of how they look and how they act. And actually, Leonard and I were in the rainforest on Easter. We were having a little rainforest adventure up here in Australia. What was the name of? We were in Dorrigo Rainforest, and very exciting. It was beautiful.
One of the most ancient rainforests of Gondwana land. Beautiful, huge trees just going up. Right. Almost to the highest point in the sky that you can imagine.
And we saw two things. I'm remembering. There was the movie, and then there was the tree. And I guess I'll mention the movie first, or you can. Mm-hmm. So
in the movie, they were showing the natural, flora and fauna of the rainforest and the predators. And they showed us films of birds and baby birds being fed by their mother and father. Then they showed us nasty snakes, nasty carpet python eating the bird. And immediately I felt the sort of prickles going through me and sort of, you know, hating the snake and seeing the snake as evil. And then David pointed out that the snake had to live too, and that the birds were being fed insects. So from an insect's perspective, the birds were probably evil. And that led us to a discussion about whether we are being incredibly judgmental about even just the natural, you know, order of things.
Yeah, are we biased about living creatures? I mean, birds are cute. I mean, they were little birds being fed by their mother, but they were eating bugs. And do we like bugs? I mean, do bugs have any value? Are they living creatures? Do they have intelligence? Or is this just our superiority complex? Are they more important? Are birds more important than bugs? And are birds more important than snakes? Do we like them better? I mean, these are just opinions and preferences. These are just our human biases. Are they real?
And of course, tribal man has a much clearer perspective of this, the balance in the world, the yin and the yang, the predators, the victims, it all balances out. And it all is as it is, and it's all beautiful. And this discussion that we had about these predators led us to understand how judgmental we can be, and how acceptance of what is may be a much greater, more balanced perspective to have.
I also saw a tree. I mean, they had some unusual, the vegetation in this rainforest was incredible, and they had this type of tree. It was sort of very broad and ribbed and just amazing. But I looked, and we saw a face in the tree, not an ethereal face, but it was a protrusion coming out of the bottom of at the base of the tree. And it looked like a face. It had feet. It was round, and it had this sort of contorted facial features to it. And I was very excited by that because I've never seen anything like this. But Lana, when you looked at it, it sort of looked very, and I agree. It did look a bit, I guess I hate to use the word dark, but it did look a little bit dark and demonic the way we put the meaning to those words. And so I actually wanted to take a photo, but you didn't want me to because you thought that maybe it was just a little too dark.
Yes, it just seemed very dark. But it's interesting that immediately judgment came into the picture. And it's hard not to be judgmental.
And I saw that as well. I saw what you saw. I saw the exact same thing that you saw. And I had the same feelings about what you saw and feelings about what you were feeling about that sort of face in the tree.
So that leads us to a question of, if we are to step out of the matrix and non-duality, do we try to stop the natural fears that come to us of things that may or may not harm us? Or do we try to rise above that? Mm. Is it possible for us to rise above our own natural judgments?
And I think that's why so many spiritual teachers say you need to meditate, because when you meditate, that's when you start to become the observer and you start to look at an inner self-exploration of your thoughts and feelings, and you don't judge them. You look at them and you start to look at your beliefs, and you start to see your own internal programming, your own internal operating system at work, your personal belief system. And that's that's our matrix. And we have to understand what our own thoughts are rather than in our own thoughts and feelings, as opposed to outside information that we've been given since childhood or through the media or through friends and family or whatever. There's a difference between what we truly believe about ourselves and the world and what we've been told about ourselves in the world. And that's part of self-mastery, and that's part of stepping out of the matrix. That's the very beginning of it.
No one's saying that we should go and cuddle spiders, but I guess what we're saying is that our subjective self will always be there, but the ability to broaden our consciousness to a more ascended consciousness, which is non-judgmental and all peaceful and accepting, may give us a much more ascended or transcendent understanding of life.
Right. And so when we talk about creatures that exist outside of our frame of reference, things that we don't, a lot of us don't even know exist because of our own limitations of our physical body and our physical senses, the things that exist in the spirit world or the invisible world or the hidden world, as I like to call it, the things we call demons or astral entities or astral parasites or astral predators, we could look at those things. Many of us have seen these things throughout history. We've seen angels and demons, those are the things we like to call them, but they're really just entities and spirits. But there's a term in mysticism called as above, so below, as within, so without, meaning that there are other levels of reality. And so the spirit world is the world of the invisible world is the one that it's not separate from the physical world or the material world. It exists right here with us. At the same time, these invisible beings, and they're not really invisible, it's just the way the limitations of our perception that doesn't allow us to see them, but they are there and they are part of this world. And so do we look at them, if they're predatory, do we look at them as demons, and do we give the meaning of evil to them, or do we see them as any other creature, any other living creature that we know of, like lions and tigers and bears that are also predatory and carnivores?
So we're going to have to take a break there. After the break, we're going to be talking about whether it's possible to love a demon or your demons. Great topic. Don't go away. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
From Universal Soul Love, broadcasting on BBS Radio. Stay tuned.
Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. I'm your host, Detective David Love.
And Dr. Lana Love, welcome back to our show.
We're broadcasting live on the BBS Radio Network from the land down under, and we're talking about the Ascension today. And just before we came back from break, Lana said,
can you love demons?
Or can demons love? And do we actually know the answer? And do we need to know the answer?
Do we need to be able to do this, to step outside of the matrix? Is it possible to love everything in the universe and to connect with everything in the universe? And the topic of as above, so below, as within, so without. If there's negative things that happen in the world, do we need to look inside of us and heal those things inside of us?
And in the Bible it said, on earth as it is in heaven. So clearly, can this be heaven? If we are choosing our own meanings, then we have the power to choose between positive and negative and love and hate. So I guess we have the power of choice. That's part of our personal power, our inner power, our manifesting power, our reality manifesting power. That's what makes us powerful, is the power of choice. So the answer would be yes, you actually can love a demon. And in fact, you don't even need to call it a demon.
Paradoxically, when you stop labeling things, they lose their power.
That's very true. And in fact,
when you lose your fear, they lose their power.
That's
because
right.
Demons can feed on fear.
That's right. They feed on many of these astral predators and parasites actually feed on negative energy, because we all feed on negative energy.
May I also say that angels sort of feed on love?
They do. Yes.
Much nicer.
Aren't we all parasitic to some degree? All creatures are basically parasitic, and we all feed on energy. When we eat food, it's transformed into energy that we use to operate. Our bodies need food. It converts organic food into energy so that we can exist. So spiritual beings like angels and demons, if we're going to call them that, also feed on energy. Angels apparently feed on positive energy or love, and predatory beings may feed on hate, fear, anger, sadness. And I've seen this, the proverbial dark cloud that feeds on depression and sadness and negative emotions. So
now, we're not suggesting we go and play with demons or hug a demon. We're not doing that at all. But we are suggesting that this perspective shift gives us a better understanding of our world and actually stops us getting into that cycle of fear, which paradoxically stops other entities feeding from us. And the same goes with people. People can be unpleasant and they can be very pleasant. Right. Now, in Buddhism, to be able to have true non-attachment, there's a really interesting exercise that you can go through. You can think about the person that you hate the most in the world and then start to try to see the good in them. Start to see characteristics that you like and try to reduce those feelings and try to start loving them. Paradoxically, you take someone who you really, really love and you might want to experiment with thinking about characteristics that are not so good in them, that other people might see that are not so good. Mm. And that way, you almost try to neutralize the judgments while creating a great sense of love and connection to all living things. Because this way it gets rid of personal judgments. Because, of course, one man's meat is another man's poison. One woman's lover is another woman's, hated, evil enemy. We all have personal judgments.
We all have preferences and opinions. And astral predators and astral parasites are part of the universe. They exist. All things exist. They all exist with us. You could think of parasitic beings or entities or energies just like you would mosquitoes or leeches or anything else. They exist. And you can't destroy anything. We know this from physics. Matter and energy cannot be destroyed. It can only be transformed. So you can't destroy a demon. You can't destroy an angel. You can't destroy anything permanently. Death does not destroy anything. So the idea of good versus evil, it can be a manipulation. It can be very deceptive. You cannot – ethnic cleansing. You cannot wipe out – I believe in reincarnation. But you cannot wipe out anything. It always comes back to you. The energy will always exist. So the idea of elimination is not a good solution. So we need to think in terms of alchemical transformation. And we have the power to do that. These are your thoughts and feelings. And these are my thoughts and feelings and our judgments. So I'm not suggesting that you allow anyone to assault you or attack you or feed on you or anything else. I'm talking about how you perceive reality so that you have more power and self-mastery over yourself, your own mind, and the things outside of you so that you can make better choices and have a positive outcome in these situations.
And on the topic of alchemical transformation, which is a really important one, I agree. And David and I have an interesting, I guess, way of looking at the world, which we're trying to master the last few years. When you are in a negative situation, we try to turn this into a positive situation. We try to see what good can come of this. And it's a really fun exercise. And it is amazing how many times a seemingly negative situation can be turned into a positive one where you can get,
It's like using you have one problem and you actually find out that you can use this one problem to solve a different problem or even a bigger problem. It's almost like the problem becomes a solution.
And it's really fun. It's really challenging, but it really does bring home the point that things are not black or white and you can merge one into the other. You can be your own personal alchemist, transforming base metals into gold if that's what you choose and vice versa.
And we do know this works. We've done this successfully many times. We've experimented with it. We've experimented with a lot of things. And now we're rolling out, I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent here, but we're now rolling out the Super Consciousness Project.
Which is a fantastic project we have where we're aiming to try to help the ascension of humanity. And it's very exciting, but it's based on these concepts.
Yeah, it is. It involves, the mission of Universal Soul Love, our mission statement is to raise the vibration of the planetary consciousness, to raise the vibration of humanity to a higher level that includes ourselves. It starts with in each one of us, within Lana and within myself and within everyone. And this is happening. We are seeing a global shift happening. So these are very exciting times, and we're very privileged and honored to be part of this New Earth movement. And the Super Consciousness Project has been one of our pet projects for many years. It involves catalyst groups trying to come together to sort of, it's not a meditation. I know we've talked about this before. It's sort of pushing consciousness outwardly. It's sort of raising consciousness.
In the presence of many conscious beings that are quite highly ascended, and we do have a lot of contacts and connections with highly spiritual people that can actually channel even more ascended or transcended beings. So it's a very exciting project. But of course, it does start with yourself. It starts inside, and we have also been practicing Ho'oponopono, which is a brilliant way of addressing any of the ills in the world inside of yourself, healing yourself.
It changes your own internal programming.
Absolutely. Absolutely does.
You could even it starts with when you're feeling upset about a situation, you can stop yourself for a minute. You can close your eyes if you want to, and you can say in your mind, could you do the Ho'oponopono, Lana? I'm sorry.
Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. So if you're dealing with someone and you have a negative, tense relationship with them, you can try to heal that by going within and healing that. And I think that's a really important point to understand, that we are like holograms of the whole universe. We can heal ourselves in order to heal the universe and vice versa.
That's the point of singularity.
That is. It is indeed. Meaning, and that's a starting point. But the Super Consciousness Project is a step forward where many consciousnesses are going to connect and try to help humanity ascend and transcend. So that's very exciting, and we'll keep you tuned in on this, and we'll probably be having another radio show on the Super Consciousness Project.
I'm sure we will.
But for now, we'll have to wrap up. So we're glad, very glad that you've joined us on this amazing topic of ascension or transcension. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And Detective David Love.
And you've been listening to Universal Soul Love, and we're broadcasting on BBS Radio.
From the land down under.
Join us next week.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.